Welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Black Opinions Matter, motherfucker. My name's Amino Hassan. I'm joined, as always, by Black Trey, Big Jerv. This is a big Waz week, and guess what, guys? We brought the band back together. My guy, Mariano Bivens, is back on the show. Produced, as always, by Rob Lopez. I'm going to be honest with you. I have a very excited voice right now. I'm a very happy voice in this intro. This ain't a happy podcast. I mean, we try to find some joy, but it's tough. We're going to talk about DMX's life and legacy. Obviously, this is a guy that we all loved and missed and grew up with his music and really appreciated what he brought to the table. I brought a special guest, one of my best friends in the world, Elite. You guys might know him from his production work on Dreamville, but Elite, formerly, he's got to start with Rough Riders. So we're going to ask him about DMX, working with DMX, some fun DMX stories. And we're just going to remember the man's legacy. We're not going to talk about the negative stuff. We're going to talk about the positives when it comes to DMX. And then later on the show, Dante Wright. I know you guys have probably seen this in the news already. Young man who was murdered by Minneapolis police this last weekend for the crime of hanging too many air fresheners. I mean, you can't write this shit. It's just so fucking ridiculous. So we're going to get some stuff off our chest this episode. Bear with us. As always, patreon.com/countthedings. Become a Patreon. That's where we get all the extra content as a thank you to you guys, including we have another overflow this week. We're going to talk about Snowfall. We're going to talk about Kyrie Irving, why he got so mad that Dennis Schroeder called him nigger. We're also going to talk about some other stuff in there. So you definitely want to join us for that. Patreon.com/countthedings. If you're not a member, join up, sign up. Beyond the bomb overflow episodes, we also have the Cinephobe special edition episodes, the Cinefeud, where me and Zach go head to head on trivia about some of the awful movies we've watched. You have the special edition episodes about certain things happening each month. We had in February, we had Valentine's Day. In March, we had St. Patrick's Day. April, we're going to celebrate 420. So you don't want to miss the special edition 420 episode that'll drop on the Patreon for our Patreons only. Definitely do it, guys. Trust me, it's worth it. But anyways, enough selling to you guys, enough pressuring you guys to help us out with good reviews and all that stuff. Let's get to the show. Let's go ahead and welcome Elite in, and let's talk about Dark Man X.
You know what I'm saying? These Rough Rider niggas.
Dog.
I heard these niggas is for real.
Dog.
Uh-huh.
That's my man, saying that.
But I heard these niggas supposed to be like locking down the industry on some shit, on some power shit.
Dog, that's my man's in them.
I see.
So what I'm doing?
Right, right.
My man's in them is doing. Because.
Right.
That's my man's in them. You know.
I feel you.
Now you feel me.
I feel you.
So you know, when you fucking with me.
Right, right.
You fucking with. Now, told y'all niggas, just don't listen. Why must you be hard headed? Tried to explain, but you didn't hear me though.
Give it to them all like that. It ain't no love, I do them all. fall like that. Fall right up in the back. Clack, clack. Close your mind, baby, it's over. Forget it. Happened in front of your building, but nobody knows who did it.
Why? Where my dogs at? Well, why? Where my dogs at? Where my dogs at? Well, why? Where my dogs at? Where my dogs at? Well, why?
I missed you and me.
Oh, man. The streets miss me. Yo, so, but the streets miss somebody more important than me. We miss DMX, man. I'll be honest, man. A lot of people passed away over the last, you know, couple of years. Your Chadwick Boseman, a couple other names. Kobe, obviously. I think DMX is the biggest reaction I've seen since Kobe. In terms of people passing away, because he was just a dude like Kobe. He's like kind of larger than life. Like X would be fine. And unlike Kobe, this dude lived a crazy ass lifestyle, like a lifestyle that has a short life expectancy to it. But for some reason, like I thought he's going to be like Keith Richards and the Rolling Stones. Like it don't matter what they do, they're going to be alive forever. Yeah. And so for him to have, you know, even when he was in the hospital, say he's in critical condition, I'm like, he'll be fine. He's going to be fine, man. They can have a funny story about it. He's going to talk about meeting God or whatever. And you know, it didn't work out. And so I think, I don't know about y'all, but for me, I'm in shock. But I did want to have my friend Elite on because y'all know him, obviously, from producing tons of hit records for Ari Lennox, for Cole, for all types of artists. But before that, he lived another life where he was a rough rider. And Lee, let me ask you first, man. Did you ever have to ride a motorcycle? Like, did it ever make you ride like a four-wheeler or something just to prove that you were down?
No, fortunately not. I managed to avoid that. But yeah, it was an option, just wasn't a requirement.
Lee, it feels like Dreamville and Rough Riders is rap camps. Don't have a lot in common. Am I wrong to make that assumption?
You're completely, you know, yeah, it's complete different, different vibes, different, you know, same principles, but like different execution, you know what I mean? Like very, very different, for sure. Yeah.
Waz, I knew it was different when I saw that video of Boss on the ATV. Like what was it? Was a slingshot? He was on one of them fucking weird ass
motorized joint.
And he
bought the first day he bought it, he drove it all the way to the crib and crashed it as he got into his gate. So therefore had to bring it right back to get it serviced. First day.
That's how I knew it was different. That was the day I realized there might be a difference.
I mean, you gotta know it's different when you listen to Styles P song Holiday. It's different from anybody that has that in their camp is like, yeah, nobody.
Did Styles go to jail for stabbing somebody in the ass?
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think I dove that deep into that. But, you know what I mean?
I rewatched the Rough Riders Chronicles. I did not notice that story pop up. So. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, ironically, with that being with us highlighting the Rough Rider Chronicles early on in the year, was it early on in the year or was it last year?
I can't even keep up with the times.
But ironically, we got a scope into how he got, you know, on drugs and, you know, the demons that he battled and obviously the career that he had and obviously the up and downs and then also the wins and being at the peak. So it wasn't really, I guess, crazy to me. You know what I'm saying? But also I didn't know him personally enough to use the words that I'm at peace to have that personal connection with him to say, you know, as Swiss B said, my brother is finally, you know, transitioned and is good. But as a fan and someone who consumed his music at 13, 14 years old, you know what I mean? Like between 98 and 2003 was my entire high school years. DMX was like pivotal, you know what I'm saying? And I used to be like Rough Riders versus Cash Money all the time. And then obviously his prayers, you know, I mean, relating it as far as in Christianity and things of that nature, like, and also relativity as far as drug use and my mom being, you know, in that situation, everybody's battles is different. And I felt like no matter what X was dealing with, you know what I'm saying, from the outside looking in, he was embodying everybody else's, but not his own sometimes. You feel me? And with Swiss message, you know, the other day that he put out was like the time that he was actually, I guess, safe or had some peace of mind was when he was in jail. And that's kind of crazy because he couldn't use, he had time to like really think and just focus and kind of be him, I guess. And that's kind of a wild scenario.
That's one of the reasons I wanted Elite here, because you brought up something in our group chat, Elite, where you brought up the lyric where he said he came back, he was gone for 7, he came back at 14 or whatever. And it's a crazy kind of thing to think about someone who's spent their life basically institutionalized.
Yeah, I mean, that lyric alone, I mean, yeah, I was saying, I think it was in Slippin', right, when he said that, and I was like, that sounds like, if you just heard that song, you didn't know DMX's story, it sounds like a made-up rhyme. Like, come on, man, you went to jail at 7 and came back at 14. It sounds like some over-exaggerated rap lyric, you know, but it's like, no, he really did, you know? It's like... Yeah. That's, I mean, I don't know. They say it was like jail. I don't know what they, you know, they say that the home that he went to was basically like for extremely like troubled youth. And it was pretty much like a prison, you know? So to experience that from age 7 to 14, I mean, that just puts you in a whole different league of like trauma, you know, that I can't even begin to understand what that would be like.
So Elite, what was your first experience, you know, after Joe Rough Rider? What was your first experience with X Light?
Oh, man. Well, I had a couple. Well, the first was, I remember I was at the studio because I was an intern at first.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, how did you get involved with Rough Riders? And then how did you find your way to start working with X?
Yeah, well, basically, I did a summer program with my school, SUNY Purchase, which is, you know, a Westchester school. And Dean Wah's younger sister, Alima Dean, she was in the same, it was a music class, and she was in the same class as me, and we met through there. So she kind of took me under her wing and got me an internship and ended up managing me, but got me an internship at Powerhouse in Yonkers, which was the Rough Rider studio. And I was like, you know, 19, I think at that time, maybe 18. And, you know, at this time, this was around the time they were working on Scorpion for Eve. So that's how I always mark it by that album, because I remember when I came in, they were all talking about that album. So, you know, X was already like super, super mega, like the mega X years were kind of already done. And like, I mean, he was still at his, you know, he was still huge, obviously, but it was, you know, a little bit later on in the timeline, and it was like rumors were that X was going to come in for a studio session at Powerhouse, and he didn't usually use Powerhouse anymore because like he had graduated to like super megastar. And like at that time, Powerhouse was for like Drag On and like Jin and like Infrared and Cross and like these guys who were, you know, sometimes Jadakiss would come through, but even that was like, oh shit, you know, like, so, one night we had a rumor that X was going to come through, and they made the studio look all nice. They had all the snacks, all the food and everything. And I was so excited. Like, I made sure I was there on time. I was waiting the whole night, and he never showed up. I was like, damn, man, where's DMX? So anyways, I didn't end up meeting him for a while. But what happened was I got to go on tour. I actually produced a song for him and Bizarre Royale. That was on his album Year of the Dog. Bizarre Royale was signed to Bloodline. That was DMX's label. And that was like a track that basically, I wasn't in the studio or anything when they made it. I just did the beat. They did it. And I became real, real close with Bizarre Royale because we were both there for the mix. And he was real cool. So we became real close. And Bizarre was opening up for DMX. So he invited me to come on tour. And I was just like, oh shit, all right. So this is 2007, Year of the Dog tour. First night, first show in Philadelphia. First song, DMX gets up on stage. Within like 20 seconds, somebody, I guess, threw like water on him from the crowd, and he just jumps off stage and beats the shit out of this guy. And
like, sounds and, about
like,
right.
It was crazy. Sounds about right. Wait. What was even crazier though, not only was that crazy, but like he gets back up on stage and like they he's like, I guess some people just don't know. And then the DJ dropped who we be. It was like, wow. And the whole place just went crazy. I was like, this guy is a superhero. Like, what is going on right now?
The
like,
fact that you could beat somebody ass and then go back to performing is nuts.
But the transition like is so smooth. That's crazy. Like, that's the smoothest transition ever. Like I guess they just don't know. And then it's like, who we be? That's the song. Exactly. That's really the song. Like, that's insane.
I give props to the DJ because I don't think that was part of the set. I think he just.
I was going to say, is that part of the set? That's yeah, crazy. Imagine DMX showing up and just beating up a random nigga in the crowd.
I'm going to tell you this.
I'm going to beat up a nigga in the crowd. Then what year was this? Who we be?
It's going to be a nigga that's going to throw water on me.
It's 2007. And so that was my first introduction to him, like, in person.
I think I was there.
For real? And really?
I think I was at that show. That was kind of lit. That was kind of a fire show.
That was you?
Yeah. No.
Jerv, they got washed up by X.
No, I definitely didn't get washed. Yo,
but side note of the story, yo, fuck the media, how they trying to write my man X off like that. He's officially on the no slander list. Relatability as far as like drug abuse and fuck drugs, first of all, with all caps. You know what I'm saying? It's one in every family. You know what I'm saying? Relatability. You got an uncle, you got a cousin, you got a mom, you got an auntie, you got a friend that, you know what I'm saying? It's a sick disease that, you know, obviously the show we're going to talk about later is highlighted pretty much and ruined. But what I seen and what I noticed, you know, after X passing, was this nigga real name is Random Man X. And the reason why I call him Random Man X, because everybody had a DMX story. It's kind of similar to like Nipsey because like he was that accessible. Like
right.
I seen where the nigga actually went into a Waffle House and made an omelet.
I got one of those stories.
Like, what are you doing?
What you got, Elite? Give us a
yeah, I got one of those. So, I mean, the main thing about X that I took away from being on tour with him was like how, you know, he was mega famous, you know, like there are some people who are famous. There's some people who are mega famous. He was more famous than I think he was successful at that time. It was like, he was so famous. Anybody who saw him, it was like, ah, oh my God, it's DMX. So everybody would come up to him. You know, he was so approached like so often and he was so present. Every time somebody would approach him, he'd never brush anybody off. He'd never give them like, oh, okay. What's up, man? But he would like stand there with you, hear everything you have to say. Anything you gave to him, he'd give it back to you the same level of love, you know, and that really stuck with me, you know, like, damn, this guy is like so grounded for being so famous. So what happened was we were in Kansas and we're just standing outside the hotel. It was like me, X, Bazaar, and maybe like two other people. And some fans come up. They're all like shocked, of course, to see DMX standing on the street in the middle of Kansas, you know, and they're like, oh my God, DMX, ah. And he was just like, where y'all going? And they were like, oh, like shocked. You know, they're like, oh, we're going to get sushi. And he was just like, all right, let's go. And just starts walking with them. And we're like, all right. So we all start walking with these random fans to this sushi restaurant, like down the block. We all go in, we all sit at the same table. DMX is sitting there with this group of fans, like eating sushi, like, and not like, it wasn't fake or like, you know, It didn't seem like performative. I mean, he was really enjoying himself, really having a good time with these fans, laughing, joking. The staff was coming in. He was having fun with the staff, took pictures with everybody who was working there. Like, and of course he got the bill. Like he paid for everyone's food. Like, I mean, I was just like, imagine being those fans and coming home with that story. Like we saw DMX on the street and he came and ate sushi with us.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah, I imagine Bex eating sushi like fucking Tasmanian devil, where he just takes the tray. He just takes the tray and just lets it all fall in his mouth, bro. Like
he's not even, good.
Could you imagine DMX using chopsticks, bro?
No, that's insane.
Yo, did he use chopsticks?
Man, I do remember. I think he was not quite into the cuisine. You know what I mean? Because he liked like Denny's. Like he would go to Denny's, Burger King. Like that was his like speed, you know, like he wasn't like going to sushi spot. I think he was just doing it on some like, fuck it. Let's go chill with these fans. You know, like
that's fire. Something you said that stood out to me was when you said he was more famous than successful. And I think that's part of the conflict of like the bigger artists, where it's like we see them on TV all the time and we see them selling out this and that. And it's like they're way more famous, but the success is, you know, it's not really there. The thing about DMX that I always appreciated was like his gratitude, because when you speak about him being grounded, that's what keeps you there. Like you still so far away from where you want to go, but you know where you came from. And it's, yeah, shit was way worse before. And I know I got a long way to go, but he seemed to embody that a lot. And I think that's why a lot of people like genuinely just like loved X and rooted for X, because through all of his struggles, all I ever saw was people root for him. And like Amin said, nah, he gonna be good. It was never like jokes or like, you know, not from us, not from like the real, like we support X. It was like, nah, he gonna come back from this, man. He gonna be good. That's X. We always had that love for him. So like, just to hear you tell that story is like, it just kind of, you know, brings that point home for me. Like that's
Mark,
real.
Let me ask you, Mark. I'm glad you brought that up, because I saw a lot of people over the last couple of days saying like what Trey said, fuck the media. Da, da, da. I'm like, maybe I'm just following the wrong people. Maybe I'm following the right people. But like, I felt like overwhelmingly the reaction was great stories and love and stuff
New York
like
Times
that.
Was trash, fam. And they did him dirty.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
they posted his foreclosures. You know what I'm saying? It was basically spitting on the grave, fam. And like, it was really disrespectful.
That's what people were talking about, yeah.
I thought the Daily News did a good job, because they highlighted, obviously, homie old boy from across the country. I mean, in the other country. And then they did, because they said, you know, Prince, and then the Prince of Yonkers. And they did a split cover. And I was like, that's classy. But when you highlighting New York's own, you know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, I'm on ground zero here. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing X for the past fucking 48 hours.
And I think they did that when he was still fighting for his life. Like, they did that in the middle of that. It wasn't even, you know, at any time it's tasteless. You know, let's get that clear. It doesn't matter, like, what, you know, what point. But, you know, it's like,
New York Times can do whatever the fuck they want. I was alive in 97 when I first heard 4-3-2-1. I'd never heard of DMX, never heard him before. And his verse at the end, like his cadence, his voice, I was like, what is this?
Stay out the dark, as if I catch you when the sun is down. Run it, clown, come up off that. I'm gonna gun it down, run it down. However it's gonna go, it's gonna be that. See that? That shit'll finish you, dog. Believe that. Where we at? Do you value your life as much as your possessions? Don't be a stupid nigga, learn a lesson. I'm gonna get you either way, and it's better to live. So let me get what's in your sock, cause it's better to give, to receive. Believe what I say when I tell you. Don't make me put you somewhere where nobody will smell you. And when the lights is out, they don't come back on. This ain't a flick, you ain't gonna come back on. You ain't that strong, knew it was wrong. But you asked for it, baby. Use a big nigga, ski mask for it, baby. So I can hit you up on front street. You get dumb sweet, you want heat, one deep, leave behind. One,
yo,
sweet.
One, two, three, four. And then, of course, he drops Get At Me, Dog, which just, that shit was a fucking explosion in New York City. I don't know if I can't speak for the rest of the country, but in New York, it like they were like freaking, it was like folklore that like clubs would tell DJs, you can't play this song because people start breaking
too crazy, fam.
You know what I'm saying? Like DMX, like that whole movement, that shit was just, it was all encompassing in New York, like the whole Rough Riders thing. And, you know, I swear, like 40 million niggas got bikes after DMX and them started popping, right? Like it was so, you know, New York Times could do whatever the fuck they want. I was alive. I remember this guy's impact. And, you know, in 1998, that's when Hov obviously sort of had his ascent. He dropped Hard Knock Life and all of those things. And he famously sold 5 million records. And of course, Puff was, Bad Boy was still pretty freaking on top of the world. And here comes this dude who is talking about being homeless and sticking people up to eat. And his shit is the biggest shit in the game, right in the middle of like fucking Jiggy era. You know, that's what I'm going to remember about fucking DMX. That guy was a freaking alien from outer space, bro.
He made good Christian robbery music. That was it, bro. You know what I'm saying? Because you could get God and then you could stick somebody up and then ask for forgiveness at the end of the CD.
Yo, like, but Waz, you said 4-3-2-1 was the first DMX.
The first time I ever heard DMX was on that verse.
That was before Pull It?
See, I heard.
Was that, this, I think Pull It was after that.
Okay. Pull It was after that. I heard Get At Me Dog first. It was on a Clue mixtape. Mm. And I was just like, who the fuck is this? Because it was just, the energy was just so different, right? And then 4-3-2-1. And then Pull It was the one with Cam'ron, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it never then, made an album.
And then I think, I want to say the first single was Rough Riders Anthem, right? Mm-hmm. Off the album.
Yeah.
That was like,
I think Get At Me Dog. No,
Get At Me Dog was the first single off the album.
Because you got to remember me saying that the video, if you have epilepsy or whatever, you can't watch.
Yeah, because they shot at the tunnel. They shot at the tunnel and it was all black and white. Hype Williams did it all black and white. And it was like, it wasn't a video. They just basically brought cameras. That was an actual, you know, a lot of times the video.
They just filmed a performance.
Do performing live, but it's not really a live performance. This one was like truly a live performance, and it just shot it in black and white. Elite, what was the first DMX track you heard?
It's got, you know, it's got, hearing y'all talk about it, it all kind of blends together for me. I feel like it was probably 4-3-2-1, because I mean, I love that song so much. I was a huge Cannabis fan. I remember I had this mixtape. It was called DMX versus Cannabis. I don't know if any of y'all had it, but that was like, yep. How I became like a DMX fan. It was like all the freestyles, and DMX and Cannabis and Noriega had a freestyle on Funk Flex where they all, it was the three of them, and they all like did verses back and forth. And I remember listening to that nonstop. I think that was before his album came out. So, you know, around the same time as you guys.
For me, I was intro to DMX off Harlem World. Take What's Yours, 24 Hours to Live. 24 Hours to Live was crazy. Mm, I said, who is this nigga? He barking on this motherfucker. Yeah. I said, oh, nah. 12
That video is crazy, too.
First of all.
He
popped out the mud.
And you got 24 hours to live, right? Like, it was Kiss on the...
Where did you go? Yeah, nah, Kiss had a crazy verse on there. But the fact that I was exposed to him around that time, and like, again, going into that tour, right? I got introduced to obviously Ja Rule through Hov, and then also, you know, DMX through Mace. But that 98, which was my eighth grade year, bro, getting It's Dark as Hell is Hot and then Flesh of My Flesh in the same year. I know I know people talk about Hov all the time and all this other shit, but DMX was 1998. Like,
yep. Yeah, he's
worldwide. Worldwide. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine. I can't even like process in my mind what New York was like in 1998. But to even have the West Coast ear.
A lot of Averex jackets.
I'm sure.
But I'm saying,
and Vasquez boots.
But like, think about that though. Like, to imagine to grab the West Coast ear after post Pac and have us locked in and like, yo, this nigga got a motherfucking dog chain on. He got the back tat. He grimy. Mm-hmm. Like, he painting the fucking picture, but also like the struggle. He not flashy. Cause you know what I mean? Like, niggas is on the fence. We was just now welcoming that shit. So to see it, it was exciting. The energy, the nigga made, he was the first nigga to actually make hype music for the layup line, fam. Dog. Like, Rough Riders Anthem, my nigga. I mean, are you trying to like bang out?
That nigga was like every East Side Detroit nigga like ever, because like, you know, in Detroit I always say we had the benefit of like not having a dog in the fight, because like we wasn't part of the East Coast, West Coast, the down south, the whatever. So our radio played everything, we heard everything. And when DMX came on, my very first memory of DMX was like, one of my homeboys was a huge Cannabis fan, so when y'all say 4-3-2-1, I remember that song like just off the top, because he used to play nothing but Cannabis all the time.
That was me.
So when I heard, I'm telling you, it was like every single time he'll be like, hey, put this on. I'm like, Chun, is that? He was like, yeah. I'm like, all right, man. So, but with X, what stood out with him was like, you got to remember too, like me getting older, I got friends and family that's in New York. He's from Yonkers, like not the main, you know, Harlem, Brooklyn, none of that. Yeah. It's Yonkers. Like Kiss call it the forgotten borough. You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't put that in the forefront. And for him to take over like that means something, because it's like, nah, that's undeniable right there. Like, I don't care where you are in the world. when you hear his music, you're gonna feel it. Like, it's just, it's different. Like, he really just was different, man. Like,
I think that shit is crazy. When I would first listen to him, the thing that stood out to me, just, you know, I was in high school, so I was a kid, and this was all like, hearing these things to me at this time was like, you know, a lot of rappers were talking about killing people, they're talking about robbing people, that was like the theme of rap at that particular time that I was listening to. Of course, there was the flashy stuff, but then you had like all these other, you know, there was other artists that were doing this at that time. But I remember as a kid, when I would hear that stuff, I'd be like, all right, this sounds like stories. Like, you know what I mean? These sound like kind of fictional stories of people kind of enacting these things. When I heard DMX, that was the first time that, just as an outsider, an observer, you know, from the suburbs, I'm hearing this and I'm like, this sounds like this is true. Like, this guy is saying he killed somebody and I'm believing it. You know what I mean? I'm like, he might have actually done this. Like, he was just so
Wonderful. And the crazy thing is too, Ali, is he, like, so much shit that I didn't realize at the time. Like, he put a lot of like jail culture in his raps, right? Like, when he talked about, you know, every time he come around, I got to get my dick sucked, or such and such would have got fucked on the yard or whatever. I'm like, yo, all
right, man,
this is different.
I would tell you, hey, man.
But like, it was real though.
Yo, go back and listen to Where the Hood At. I was like, I don't know if I can play this at the loud volume anymore. I used to love that song. And I'm like, hey, was he on it? I mean, y'all niggas having sex with the same sex.
Oh, hey, that song right there, my nigga. I was going down a like wormhole,
bro.
And I'm just sitting there. I was just like, my nigga, that song right there. I said, yeah, this ain't flying. And then also the movies, right? So I watched Romeo Must Die. Then I went to Cradle to the Grave. That shit wouldn't fly in 2021. He had me hot in Cradle to the Grave, though. It was one scene, and y'all probably seen on the Instagram story where the nigga ran. He was getting chased by the dog, and a nigga ran up the wall and hit a flip, and the dog ran up with him. I almost broke my TV. I was like, nah, y'all niggas is wild.
To be fair, I feel like if you sign up to watch an action movie, the more ridiculous it is, the better of an action movie it is.
Let me tell you something. Y'all know I have a podcast called Cinephobe, man.
Yes, absolutely. Let me tell you
something. Trey, when I saw an Action Jackson, my man drove a Ferrari up the staircase and then around the hallway in the house. That was the day when I realized anything could happen, man.
Yeah,
this bro, man, Action Jackson.
The scene where he's on the quad, bro. That nigga was riding that quad through everything. I'm talking about, it was like a 5-minute chase scene of the niggas just riding it through a warehouse where niggas is just moving out of the way like, oh! He over there jumping.
Mr. Gore could never.
Hey, he was jumping and leaping bounds across buildings in a quad. I'm like, all right, bro. Y'all got me.
And to me, that's how big of a star X was that he did get into the movies, right? Like, people were so drawn to his personality that they were like, yo, why don't you come act in this movie? Why don't you, like, play some type of, you know, detective or cop or action hero? It's crazy. It just speaks to his magnetism, man.
In the case of Belly, why don't you just play yourself?
Listen, feel like he played himself in all the movies, though.
Oh, my God, man.
Nah, but Belly
was a superhero, so let's just go play a superhero.
Belly was X. Belly was X for sure. Like,
nigga had a leather trench on with leather pants, nigga, and some,
bro, listen.
Some nasty. So listen, he had some nasty butt-naked Tims on. Them shits was patent leather damn near. I was mad.
That's what they wore in New York, bro. New York niggas was rocking them butt-naked Tims, dog.
Stop. Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. Jerv been choosing violence all day, man.
No, like, I'm gonna tell you something. This is Jerv. You wouldn't even know what Timberlands
exactly.
Look, y'all wonder why I take my shots because of that arrogance right there. Y'all wouldn't even know what Timberlands were if it wasn't for
you. Really
fuck out of here.
Y'all would have still been rocking Dickies without us, fam.
Y'all would still been rocking Capri pants without us, fam.
Y'all still would be copping them 7X. Jerseys from the Bull on the Corner, the fake joints. If it wasn't for us, we had Mitchell Ness. Y'all were rocking the joints with the spider on instead of the NBA logo.
Real quick, you at home playing Philly Bingo right now? He just used Bull and Joint right back to back. So just check your card and all that. You know what I'm saying?
Yo,
he used that right back to back.
1996, we went on a road trip down to Philly. These cats would put satellite dishes on the top of their houses just to pick up Hot 97. They're like, oh, shit, I think I hear Flex. Oh.
But you road tripped to us, though, right?
New York City. Like,
let's not leave that part out. You came and visited us, though. You know what I'm saying? Well,
sometimes you want to go out to the country, you know?
real quick, just to get back to Belly, like the scene in Belly, period, right? Like, it's a lot of classic moments in the movie. But my favorite scene in Belly, period.
Is there?
No. It's a lot of classic moments because what I'm talking about is like.
It's not a good movie. But hold on.
No.
They're classic
there's
moments.
There's a
difference.
Classic moments. That's what I'm trying to, yeah. So the moment when he was in the car and he was like, and Shorty can't eat no books, man. Like, that's one of those things. And then he said, then he told him, you put the weed in the bag, then get money. Like, that's X. Nobody wrote that. I guarantee you nobody wrote that line, though. Like, they couldn't. There's no way.
When in the restaurant.
You gonna let
this nigga talk to you like that?
Nah, look, he gassing. He, ad-libbing it. Like, that's why
like his opening scene, when they all just walking through the club. It's slow motion. Mm-hmm. But that's the illest part to me.
Coldest open ever.
Ever of any movie. Because I saw those first few moments and I thought to myself, this could
see
be
what
the
I'm saying?
Movie
he just
made.
Said, is there?
But we later on in life, we realized they blew the entire budget on that open.
On the
just
scene.
Why
yeah.
It was dark as yeah. Shit.
That and that and Ox's weed supply. That was it. That's where the budget went. Like, it was like 90-10.
And that was definitely not. That
sometimes
was not,
you got to have the necessities.
Absolutely.
They went, authentic with it.
That's yeah, absolutely.
They definitely went authentic with it. Yo, Elite, leave us with some lasting memories of X-Man, like as someone who knew him. How do you think he'd want to be remembered?
You know, I don't want to pretend like I knew him like that closely. You know what I mean? It's not like I was like his best friend or anything. You know, I was around, as like a shy kid who was kind of just observing, you know what I mean? Lucky enough to be, and, you know, honored to have worked with him a few times, but like, I don't know, man. I mean, it's a tough question for me to answer. Cause I think genuine and authentic is the best words that I think, you know, everyone says real, you know what I mean? But it's like just transparent is to me what he is, you know, like that's what makes a superstar is like someone who's unapologetically themselves, you know, like where, I mean, to him, it was like, it was extremes, you know what I mean? It was super extremes as a viewer. It was like, okay, you're either like on top of the world or you're like in jail doing some crazy. It was so extreme one way or the another, but it was like all on the table for everyone to see. And that was like a sacrifice, you know, that a lot of superstars make for us as like viewers to kind of sit there and just watch and be like, wow, this is amazing. Watching this like extremely bright fire burning out, you know, and it's like, I don't know. I think as observers, it's like sometimes we look at it and then we're like, this is awesome. But at the same time, it's like, is it? Because this is kind of like, you know, like this person is sacrificing their experience for us as viewers, you know, and it's like, obviously this happens a lot. This is not just like a DMX thing. I mean, this is something that happens in our culture a lot. You know what I mean? Like with famous people, especially people who are bright burning superstars like this, like a Whitney Houston or Michael Jackson, you know, it's like, this is a repeating thing that I think we should look at as like, is this cool? You know what I mean? That like, this is happening to these people and like nobody intervenes and can you even intervene? I don't know, but I don't know, man, I'm running on a tangent, but like how he want to be remembered. I don't want to be, you know, like I can't speak for that, but I do think that how I will remember him is just being 100% authentic and courageous as hell too. You know, he was a courageous person. And I think he had a lot of balls, you know, and I respect that about him. And he was super honest and he gave his life for us to kind of watch as viewers. And I think that's pretty cool, you know?
Sure. Well said, bro.
Beautiful.
Thanks
said.
A lot. Yo, thanks a lot, Elite. You know, I appreciate long short notice you coming in here, man, and
no problem,
knowledge and giving us.
And also before you get out of here, every single time I see the word Elite anywhere, it's that I always hear it in my head, like Elite, every single time, bro, like without fail, bro. Like so,
I can't even call players Elite. Oh, he's an Elite.
Elite.
Yo, I'm gonna let you. I'm gonna give you 30 seconds to say whatever you want to say about the Knicks, because Elite is the only person other than Proof who's like the most delusional Knicks fans in the world. Elite and Proof, they go back and forth. So
I feel like I'm not that delusional, man. I think I get a lot of flack in our little sports chat because I'm enjoying this season and everyone's like, oh, but we're not going nowhere. We're not developing your young players and James Dolan, da, da, da. I agree with all that. I don't like James Dolan. I don't like the long term, but I'm just having fun this year. I'm just a fun team to watch right now. Did you play defense?
Did you or did you not give RJ the new nickname Star J?
I'm trolling when I was saying that. No, you're not.
That's kind of killer, though. I ain't gonna lie.
That's fire. That's fire. Yo, where'd he go to school?
Oh, fuck out of here, jerk.
I like RJ, man. People give him a hard time. Like, I feel like he's judged unfairly. I think he improved a lot this year. He improved his shot. He plays defense. Like, what do you want from him? He's doing good. He's 20 years old.
Elite be posting stats like since Anthony Edwards talk shit about.
He cost me some money. He cost me some money on a parlay a couple weeks ago, maybe like last week against Boston. I had like Boston -3 and he hit a three at the end, but I forgave him for that because he's really good at basketball. He's really good. So now that says a lot.
Shout, Elite, thanks a lot, bro.
Yeah, thank you guys, man.
Appreciate you, bro.
Yeah.
Put out.
In 2021, mental health is finally a thing. So many people are struggling right now and aren't feeling like their normal selves. Therapy helps, and it doesn't have to be sitting around just talking about your feelings. So what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. You could privately talk to someone if you feel like you're not dealing well with stress or you're having relationship issues. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better. Because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. See if it's for you, because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Black Opinions Matter listeners will get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/BOM. That is BetterHelp.com/BOM. See, let's talk about it. Dante Wright, 20 years old, murdered, by police in Minneapolis almost a year to where the... to when the George Floyd murder happened, not too far from where the George Floyd murder happened geographically. He's pulled over for, I'm going to be honest, I did not know. I mean, I guess I should know, being Black, everything's illegal. Air fresheners from your rearview mirror, that ain't legal? Did any of y'all know that wasn't legal?
I did not know that.
I knew it's illegal to have like a certain amount of stuff to hang from your rearview mirror, but I also just didn't think motherfuckers gave a fuck either.
Also, never heard of that.
Because I have shit hanging from my mirror right now.
Everybody does.
I thought where it's supposed to be, but you know, I don't know.
They make it for it to hang from there. Yeah.
I'm like, what are we doing?
I think you can have like one or some shit like that, but I don't think you can have.
My nigga, that shouldn't come. That shouldn't.
No. I'm just saying.
I know.
Don't,
I'm
not me.
I know that. I'm not trying to loop you into that. But I'm going to say this unapologetically, fuck the police, bro. And listen to me, because I'm fed up.
Yeah, go ahead. Like, go ahead, bro.
I got homies on the force. I got all these other people. You know what I'm saying? I understand people got jobs and they got to do what they got to do. But this ain't a job where you can make mistakes or say my bad. And in this particular case, you accidentally grabbed your gun instead of the taser.
No one does that shit.
You know what I'm saying?
Listen, this is important to note. Held it for mad long. Let's say that. Held it for long enough to know, oh, wait, this is not the gun. I mean, like, this is not the taser. This is the gun. Like, you had time to notice. And if you've been trained and you carry this shit out here, you know what you're grabbing.
It's not even the same trigger.
It's not the same trigger. It's not the same grip. And
it's supposed to be on opposite sides.
It's on opposite side. Like, how are you so bad at this where you don't even know your left and your right? And most importantly, when you pull it out, that bitch is bright yellow. Shit look like the coal right here. It look like these.
Right.
I'm like, you should know. It should, like, your eyes be like, what the fuck am I holding? Right? If you hold up something black, like, I should be seeing yellow. And I'm not. And so, again, I go back to, if your thing is like, well, this job is stressful, and if you knew, and like, what the, don't do the job.
Yeah, it's not for you. It's not for you. This is not a job for you to make mistakes. You're to protect and serve.
Go to Walmart, nigga.
Not take anybody's lives. You know what I'm saying? In a situation now, you got a mother without a son. You got a son without a father. You got a, you know, I don't know if he was engaged or whatever, but, you know, his partner does not have a partner. And that's unfortunate because this young man was 20 years old, lost his life. He even called his mom like, yo, I'm about to get pulled over. We shouldn't be dealing with this. We're almost approaching, I think, a year of, you know, the George Floyd situation. And nothing has changed, honestly. It's like, okay, we get things smoothed over, right? The things that we're supposed to be happy about. Most of us are vaccinated on this call. We're expecting to have a good time outside. How are we going to have a good time outside when still these things are happening? Right. I don't feel safe going outside. You know what I'm saying? I don't feel safe driving a car.
Even when you're all the way legit, bro. Like, I'm all the way legit, bro. I don't speed. I don't do none of the, you know, whatever shit. But when I see a police officer, the feeling that I get just in my stomach, in my soul, is just like, man, I hope that they don't. I hope that they're not in a bad mood today and just feel like fucking with me. And I shouldn't feel like that, because first and foremost, the police, when you think about the police, right? Like right now, if there's a disturbance in your neighborhood, if there's something going on in your neighborhood, if you don't think that you can handle that situation, you call the police. Like, and I'm talking about the average citizen, you know, 9-to-5 person, man, woman, whatever. You call the police to handle it because you don't think that anybody's around is equipped to handle it, right? How are you supposed to feel confident when there's a coward on the other end of that call that will pull somebody over that poses no threat to them and take their life for nothing? Like, there's no air freshness.
I wish they had killed them because I had a bad day or you know, the motherfucker license came up with it. Like, the fact that you pulling people over, anybody over an air freshener, man, but that's what we go back to. We talk, and it's, man, it feels like we always in reruns on this goddamn show when it comes to this shit. But we talked about it a year ago. I told the story about the guy who had a friend. He grew up, and his friend joined the police force, and he went on to be a journalist. And one time he said, he ran into his friend, and the guy was like, yo, you should go on a ride along. And he said, on the ride along, all the nigga kept talking about was like looking for some action. And he hear shit on the radio and they like speed just to get to some place, just to fuck shit up. This is their attitude. They're looking to fuck shit up. And so that's the only reason I can think of anybody getting pulled over some air fresheners, bro. If that's a law, that's a law that does not need to be enforced.
Exist, bro.
Why? All, bro. What is 10 air fresheners? What does that do? Does that impair my vision?
So here's a takeaway from this, though. Although this did not happen to anyone that we know personally, we, as in Black people, have to deal with this on after effect. You have your colleagues, you have your friends that are not, you know, Black, asking you, are you okay? Is there a conversation? No, bro, this shit happens. You think about the unnamed, the non-media coverage. This shit happens every day. Fucking day.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then obviously we get the DMs, we get the messages. Hey, can we talk about it? We're inheriting trauma. You know what I'm saying? Revisiting this. And it's unfortunate that Black people are forced to explain the reasoning of why we should still be here.
You know what
existence.
You know what I wonder when people ask me this shit? Where the fuck were y'all last year? For like anyone asking the question now, did y'all just wake up out of a coma? Let's forget about 1492 up until 2019. I'm going to let that one slide. Maybe you were just in your own bubble.
Right.
Where were y'all 2020?
But
y'all missed all of 2020?
But also, too, I want to say this, and this is, like, important to note, is, like, when we make just small statements, and I'm not talking about the institution of, like, Black Lives Matter, none of that. I'm talking about just the statement itself, right? At its core, we're telling you that Black Lives Matter. Stop taking these Black lives, you know, like, just don't do this shit just because you woke up on the wrong side of the bed. My thing is, when you see us standing up for to stop Asian hate, stop all of that, nobody, we didn't come out and say, stop all hate. No, like, bro, it's we focus on this right here, right now, because this is what's going on. This is important. Let's not forget this. Let's not, like, downplay this because there's other shit. Let's focus on this. Yes, let's give energy to that. And this is, and it all comes back to this. Like, it's us. When we say Black Lives Matter, when we say the cops are doing this, everybody tries to, but you got to think. And it's like, no, we don't know, because look at this. And they're like, yeah, well, that was the past. It's not the past, bro. It's happening right now, every single day.
Every
like,
day.
And it's getting to the point where it's like, who's going to be the next one that we, you know, with the hashtag on social media and shit like that. It's getting to the point where it's like, I don't want to say we numb to it, because every single time this happens, I feel it every single time. Like, I don't want to say that, but it's becoming so normal that it's like, again, bro, like, again.
Mari, I'm going to tell you some shit, because Trey said, you know, you're afraid to go outside, right? Like, we're about to go outside now. It makes you feel like, oh, man, this shit coming back too. It's still nigga hunting season out here. You know what's funny? I'm sure, Jerv, you feel the same way. Trey, you feel, Mario, you feel the same way. I'm not scared about me. I feel like I'm going to go outside. I'm going to do what I want, man. Like, and if this shit happens, it happens. But I'm scared about my kids. Like, how do I explain this? How do I prepare my kids for this?
For that. Yeah.
Because part of me is like, this is something we're going to have to talk about for sure. And then part of me is like, man, they live, they're kids. They're happy. They're just having fun. Like, Mario, how old is your oldest?
She's 12.
Have you had the talk yet?
I haven't, because I don't even know. Like, I don't see an opening to, like, go and just be like, hey, I know you just, like, bro, on TikTok and shit, but let's talk about the police. Like, you know, bro, what I'm saying?
That's how I feel. Like, I'm like,
what you're saying is 100% right.
Should I shatter their childhood and let them know, like, hey, you can't trust cops? You can't trust white people?
It's different for us. Like, it's different. It's I think the most difficult part of that conversation will be telling them that it's different for us, because then it would be like, what do you mean it's different for us? And I'm like, oh, man, what I mean by that is, if you have a friend of a different skin complexion and a different, you know, race, they can get stopped by the same officer and this may go this way. But if you get stopped let's not lose this. Right. Because it's not just Black men, it's Black women. We've seen this happen too often.
Sandra Bland,
like, we've seen this happen. So it's not just, you know, if you have a son, it's like, oh, man, my son. No, like, Black people. We're talking about black people.
Are you Black? Yeah.
If you're Black, you know, absolutely. So it's like, but again, I just haven't found that, you know. And I think that's the difficult part when you talk about that, like, having that conversation with your kids. It's like, where do you even find the opening to say that? We shouldn't even be thinking about shit like that, man. Like, we should be thinking about preparing our kids for, like, high school, college, getting a good job, or doing this, or, like, things you should look for, you know, as far as, like, hobbies and what are you into. We should be doing that, like, regular shit, not telling them that if you're just literally minding your business, and this is not hyperbole, if you're minding your business, the police may come kill you. They might. It might happen. You have to prepare yourself to have that conversation with your kids, because you have to prepare yourself to understand that that is the reality first, before you even have that conversation with a kid. Like, imagine teaching your kid about basketball, bro. Like, imagine explaining the game of basketball to your kid. You know how hard that is? It's adults that don't know about the game of basketball. So I'm talking about something that's super, like, bro, on a small scale.
Imagine explaining the game of basketball to your kids, and you start with flagrant fouls.
Right. Absolutely. Like,
you know, before you get
team fouls versus a personal foul versus a, like, and that's the game of basketball. That's something that's so regular that it's like, yeah, let's talk about this. Like, it would take you so long. And now I have to tell my kids about, like, people that are supposed to help you. How am I ever supposed to tell you to call the cops if you're in trouble? If the first introduction you get to the police is me telling you they may kill you, even if you are right, even if you call them for somebody bothering you, you may be killed. Like that, though, that shit is like, it's getting me tight. Like,
yo, you know what? I'm usually numb to this, but what was the biggest fuck you today was when they let that flag fly. They raised that flag and let it fly proud. The blue line flag at the Brooklyn station, and not Brooklyn, New York. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
In Minnesota. But it was just like, so that's how I felt.
That's what it is. It's a war. They're telling you we at war. This is our flag. This is the flag we fighting under.
Yeah. And they're taunting us because you're not really blue when you clock out or when you sign out for the day. You're a person again. I'm black, period. No matter what line of work I choose, no matter what day of the week it is, I'm blackity black. I'm black. Like, I'm black, bro. You not blue. Like, get the fuck out of here, bro. You not blue.
Also, let's point out, like, even if you is blue, nigga, you chose that shit and you could choose to stop doing it.
Man.
I ain't got no choice in that shit. I have no choice in it.
At all, bro.
I literally live in the nicest neighborhood and drive the nicest car.
I'm still a nigga in a coupe.
Listen to ZZ Top and like what's her name? Amy Schumer movies. Like, I could do all that, right? Like, never. Who is this Demix? You know, I could do all that.
Yeah.
It don't matter.
Yeah.
None of that matters, man. None of it matters because at the end of the day, I don't have a say. And that's the thing I always say, no disrespect to our brothers and sisters who are LGBTQ, because they have a struggle that's different and that's constant as well. But I always say to them, at the very least, for 5 seconds, you can fucking pretend and maybe pass. Ain't no pretending for me. Ain't no pretending. Yeah. Like, this is it. Like,
that's facts.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thanks again to our special guest, Elite. Thank you, Black Trey, Big Waz, Mariano making his return, and Big Jerv. Thank you, Rob Lopez, on the production. And thank you to you, the listeners, for subscribing, for rating, reviewing, unsubscribing, resubscribing, all that good stuff. And again, patreon.com/countthedings. We have an overflow episode coming out. We're going to talk about Snowfall, Kyrie. It's a lot of fun. You want to be a subscriber, patreon.com/countthedings. And finally, to all my Muslim brothers and sisters, happy Ramadan Kareem. Let's get it. 30 days. We're going strong.